Hi, welcome to another episode of Tech Chaos. I am your host, Krista Bender, and I wanted to let you know where you can find this show if for some reason you found this magically in your RSS feeds already. But you can go to ravepubs.com and go to the Rave Radio dropdown, and there you can find Tech Chaos as well as a bunch of other cool shows to listen to, such as The Floating Point, Trade Show Minute, AV Glue, anything you want. AV Insider, Coffee with Millennials, all sorts of things. Go there, check it out. Selling AV, I hear that one's a good one too. So
I heard that's awesome. I heard that one's really great.
Yes. So that voice is Mark Coxon. Hi, Mark.
How are you, Krista?
I'm good. So I want to preface it really quick for anybody listening to this show that Mark works for Milestone. And we are not going to be talking about LeGrand's purchase of Milestone. That has nothing to do with this show. So if you want to learn about that, I suggest you abort and go find something else to do. Mark and I are going to talk about all things that are not related to that acquisition. That sound good to you, Mark?
That's awesome.
So I want to ask you, Mark, if anybody that's a AV tweep, you know, follows you on Twitter, knows that your handle is AV Phenom, and I want you to explain to those people as well as other people what makes you so phenomenal.
I don't know that I am. I work with some phenomenal people, and I've had some, I guess, some phenomenal opportunities in the industry, which is great. Yeah, it's funny. Before I get into the genesis of that, I guess it's funny because I worked at a company where we had this guy, and he was like our sales assistant, and he would double check all of our orders for bill of materials and stuff mm-hmm. like that. And one day he goes, "I'm like, hey, nice catch on those parts that I missed." And he's like, "Oh, that's why they call me the web, because I catch all these things." And I remember saying to myself, man, anybody who gives themselves their own nickname is a jackass. And I'm like, oh. And then I give myself my own nickname on Twitter. So I have to call myself out on that a little bit.
Nice.
You know, I was reluctant to get into Twitter originally. I was working for a company called Orange Pro AV as an integrator. Mm-hmm. And so when I jumped on there, I obviously created a company Twitter feed, but I wanted to create something that followed me no matter where I went, more of kind of a personal brand mm-hmm. Piece. So, and something that wasn't, you know, didn't have to be company related all the time. And so, you know, I was trying to think of something, and really I kind of learned, I don't think so much of myself as phenomenal as I do that I didn't really have any training in AV, and I picked it up really quick. Mm-hmm. And so the Phenom thing was more of the natural, you know?
Yeah.
As opposed to continuing to be phenomenal.
Right.
But yeah, it's been fun. I mean, I think people get the handle. It's one of those that, like I said, I've went from Orange Pro AV into Horizon Display and then into Milestone, and have worked for, you know, three different brands at Milestone. So, you know, being Orange Pro AV Mark, and then being Horizon Mark, and then being Chief Mark, and then Daylight Mark, and then Vadio Mark, mm-hmm. just becomes too much. And yes. So I was really just trying to find something I could stick with. But yeah, I do get teased every once in a while. People give me a little hard time.
Yeah, I did the same thing. Well, I mean, mine's not phenomenal, but mine's just AV Krista. But I did the same thing when I chose my Twitter handle, because it was like, well, at the time I thought that I would, you know, be still working where I worked. But now, you know, three companies later, obviously that wasn't the case. So, you know, you start to build up your following and your, you know, people recognize you obviously by your handle. And like you said, if you're changing it every couple of years because you're changing jobs, people are going to be like, well, you know, where the hell's Mark, or where the hell's Krista? I can't find him, you know? So yeah, it worked out for me as well. I picked correctly.
Yeah. I think it helps a lot, especially, you know, in that social sphere where, honestly, for me, that whole AV tweeps and social community, I mean, with three kids and a wife and activities and stuff, you know, I don't have a lot of friends that I see in real life or mm-hmm. in real time.
Yeah.
And so, you know, for me, I, you know, maybe it's sad, but I have a lot of, I feel like those are my friends, you know, those are the people that I actually have some type of camaraderie and community with, and why I love going to the trade show so much, because I actually get to see a few of them for mm-hmm. a few minutes in real life. But yeah, I think if I didn't have that continuity, I would feel like I'm losing, you know, kind of touch. mm-hmm. over time or would continue to lose folks. But yeah, it's been a great community for sure. The Twitter community is one of those, like I said, I was real reluctant to join Twitter and Facebook and social media in general. Mm-hmm. And then I learned a little bit about probably what you guys teach your clients, but a little bit about authority sites and how social helps your organic Google ratings and all these kind of things. And I'm like, oh, wow, for being a business development manager at a company, I'm being pretty short-sighted to say, right. you know, my aunt's on Facebook and I don't want to be.
Yeah.
maybe well, I'd be a better I'm look
still,
at that.
Alone. I'm so weird with Facebook. I mean, I'm on Facebook, but like it is a lot more for me. Like friends and family are on there, a lot of family. Yeah. And I do use it and post to it, but my favorite is still Twitter. I absolutely love Twitter. I think it's just because of how quick it is. And sure, I miss a ton of stuff on it too, but I just love just, it's like you could throw a question out there and like, boom, you like you just wait like 30 seconds and you can get like five answers. And you know, it was great when I first got on Twitter, I think it was like around maybe 2011-ish. And you know, the whole AB Tweeps community was starting to, you know, get up and running. And it was like a really great embracing, you know, for me experience. Like it was just like, oh, wow, these are my people. Like, you know, it wasn't like you're just blindly jumping into a social media platform and you really don't know anybody and you're trying to figure it out. That's how I feel on Tumblr. Like I only know a couple people, like actual people on Tumblr. And I'm like, oh, I'm just gonna, you know, post stuff or like stuff on here. I don't know who you freaks are, but.
That's so funny. Yeah. I like Twitter too. Like you said, the question and answer, the crowdsourcing thing is mm-hmm. great. You know, some people I think feel like the 140 characters is limiting and they don't like Twitter for that reason. I really like it because it challenges me to know exactly the point I want to make.
Mm-hmm.
Because I mean, if I have to do it in 140 characters, I don't get to ramble on and hope something important was in there.
Right.
Right. Like I feel like a lot of people do that. They just start throwing stuff at the wall until somebody picks up yeah. on one and they're like, oh yeah, that's the point I was trying to make.
That's true. Yeah. With 140 characters, that's what, maybe like one or two good sentences. I mean, it's really not much. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you don't, I mean, I'm a big fan. A guy I listened to on the radio one time, I remember him saying that, you know, a lot of people will try to explain something to you and they'll go, well, I understand it in my head. I just can't explain it well. And mm-hmm. His argument against that was, if you can't explain it, you don't actually understand it that well. If you understood it well, you'd be able to articulate it. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes there are things that I want to say on Twitter or things I think I want to say. And then I realize I can't actually create a post with it. Mm-hmm. I go, you know what? I don't think I've thought this out well enough. And so yeah. it really makes me kind of go learn things more, which is good too.
Well, it's good that like my immediate thoughts don't get put on Twitter, because there's so many times I read things and I'm like, F that, or what the heck? Like,
yeah, exactly. It'd be nice if some other people used their Twitter filter instead of just throwing stuff out there. Right?
Yeah, I do that in general with social media. Like I try not to put anything like super negative or anything in general out there. Or like, I still know some people, like they'll complain like about a bad day at work and then they're sort of go into details. I'm like, oh my gosh, like don't do that. Like if your boss sees that, they could totally fire you. Like, no, don't. But people still do. I'm like, oh man, like I don't want to say I told you so.
Yeah.
So how long have you been in the AV industry, Mark? I think you've been in around as long as me, maybe longer. I've been around for 14 years, and I want to know what drew you to it.
Yeah, it was about the same. 2002, I came into AV. So early 2002 in February. So I guess it's a little over 15 years now. But yeah, about that. You know, it was interesting because I was never really drawn to AV at all. In fact, I mean, I guess I was kind of into my car stereo for a while. but other than that, I really wasn't into AV. In fact, you know, I thought I was going to be a veterinarian forever. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I was going to school for, you know, zoology and thought I might work for the game and fish department. And then, met my wife, and she's not an outdoorsy girl. You know, she didn't want to be based in Kingman, Arizona and count guppies with me for a year and then be switched to some other outpost.
But that sounds so awesome, Mark. Can we go count guppies for a year?
Yeah, I guess in retrospect, it doesn't sound that awesome to anybody, but to me at the time, it sounded kind of cool, you know, being a wildlife biologist. But anyways, I was getting married, serious about a girl. I knew I couldn't kickbox anymore, which I was teaching kickboxing through school and waiting tables. I needed to get a real job, and I ended up getting a job with IBM somehow. And I worked there for almost 2 years, and one of my friends was from AV, and he left. And I was working on a team with 650 salespeople, and he used to IM me all the time and say, "Hey, how many dials do you have today? Ha ha ha. I'm out driving and looking at a custom house in Scottsdale." Or I'm like, man, he's out having fun. I mean, he's like talking about stereos and houses and stuff. And he teased me for a while. And then after about a year of him being gone, he called me and said, "We're looking for somebody." And said, "You know, I know you didn't know anything about computers when you got there. And, you know, you learned that really quick. I know you don't know much about audio video, but I think you'd do well over here." So he got me an interview, and somehow I got the job. So they asked me to, they asked me what my weak points were, and you're supposed to, you know, you're supposed to spin that. Like if it's a small company, you're supposed to be like, "Oh, I do really bad in large companies," or, you know, or like, "Oh, it's really hard for me to not deliver a quality product." You know, you spin it into something that's supposed to be advantageous. I was, how old was I? I guess I was 20, 25. Or almost 25, 24, but I wasn't versed well enough to know. So I just said, "I don't know anything about AV." My VCR is still not hooked up at home. I don't know how to use it. You know? And but somehow I got the job offer. So you know, it went from there. I started in residential, you know, working in the DR Horton Design Center, helping people do their structured wiring and their security systems. So. And then somehow got to where I'm at today. So it's good.
Well, at what point did you cross over then to the commercial side?
I started to cross over a little bit in 2007, because the housing market crashed and, you know, all my revenue in Arizona was tied to the housing market. So, you know, I was making more money at 28 than I thought I'd ever make in my life, you know, what my dad had made as a guy at Boeing and stuff. So, then all of a sudden the bottom fell out. So, you know, we needed to figure out how to continue to get revenue. And so, I was charged with going out and getting some commercial jobs. So I got a job with CB Richard Ellis doing 540 speaker audio and sound masking system and stuff like that. And, I was programming Intertel phone systems and setting up VLANs for clients. And my voice was on everybody's answering machine for their phone tree, 'cause I was the only guy in the company that knew how to do it. So, anyways, I mean, I had to do it there, and I guess I made the formal jump to completely commercial when I moved to California. So in 2009, the company I was working for in Arizona decided they really wanted to double down on residential, and I only had a little bit of money in the bank, and I was like, you know, I don't want to bet my all my savings on, you know, the residential business, because if it didn't come back, I would have been done in a year, you know.
Right.
So we moved to California and I got into commercial here. So it was good.
Nice. You reminded me of my interview for my first integrator. While I didn't say I don't know anything about AV, at one point, I think it was, I had gone through two interviews there, and it was my second interview, and I'm in the conference room and somebody came in and came out like to interview me, and then I'm waiting for the next one, and all of a sudden, like, my back was sort of to the door and the lights go out and somebody comes in and shines a flashlight in my face, like good cop, bad cop, and they're like, "Why should we hire you?" And all I could think of was, "Because I'm awesome." Like, and then the lights came on, you know. And then we actually started talking, but I'm just like, "I don't know."
That is so funny.
Yeah, which was a lot of fun. Actually, how I got into AV is my husband was a video conferencing engineer for a pharmaceutical company, and he knew for a short period, he was a contractor that worked on site, but he was a contractor with the integrator that I ended up working for the first, for my first job. And he knew of an inside sales position that was coming open. And he's like, "Hey, well, why don't you apply for that?" Because at the time I was working at AAA, and, you know, so I was like doing all these, you know, travel agency stuff, and he was coming home talking ISDN, VGA, and I'm coming home talking about airplanes, cars, and, you know, we just couldn't connect. So so I applied, got the job, and I remember, like, I think it was like within a week I knew what VGA stood for, and I couldn't wait to tell him, like, when I got home, "I know what VGA is." Like, it's like the best thing ever.
Yeah, my wife, My wife makes fun of me all the time because, you know, she'll hear me on calls or stuff because I have a home office. So, you know, many days if I'm making calls or something from here and she's walking by, you know, I'll hang up the phone and she'll just start saying acronyms that don't mean anything to me.
Yeah.
And then she'll walk away. She'll ask me if I put the cover sheet on the TPS reports.
Awesome. Yeah. So you are a regional sales manager and you work for Milestone, but you work now for Vadio, that division of Milestone. And
yep.
But they're out of Minnesota and you're out of California. So my question to you is, as a regional sales manager, where is your region?
So I cover, for Vadio, I cover Southern California. So kind of Bakersfield to Mexico,
mm-hmm.
Hawaii. So, you know, that's terrible place to have.
That's awful.
Awful. I drew the short straw on that one. And then Las Vegas. So pretty much Las Vegas, LA, San Diego, Honolulu. So if you had four cities that you had to cover, you know, pretty terrible route to have to go through.
Yeah.
No, so I've been lucky and blessed with a great territory. The nice part is that it's all fairly close. So, you know, I have most of my territory is actually a driving territory. I mean, I live in South Orange County, so San Diego, LA is all driving. If I go to Vegas, I could drive. It's 4 hours, but, mm-hmm. You know, if I fly, it's 40 minutes. And mm-hmm. So really Hawaii is the only one that's, you know, 3,000 miles away, but we only go there once a year or so anyway. So that doesn't really come into play too much, but yeah, it's a great territory. It's a sunny territory. It's warm and sunny. It's nice.
Not a lot of rain though, right?
No, not a lot of rain. A little bit here. I'll tell you the funny thing that Milestone does is we hold our annual sales meeting every year in January in Minnesota. And so they affectionately
sounds like a good time to go to Minnesota.
Yeah. Yeah, they call it freezing at the lakes. It's nice. Actually named that. So they think it's funny. Usually everybody's sending me negative 20 weather posts like the week before trying to get us ready to come out. So we do get a taste of a cold at least once a year, but yeah, my territory is pretty close to home. It's a pretty small geographically, but a lot of dealers. I have well over 300 dealers in my territory that I support. So, you know, it can be a lot of work, but it's very rewarding and the people are great. So.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So, you know, congratulations on a hat trick because you have worked for Chief and Daylight as well. So, you know, when you've worked for both of those companies, you know, do you feel that the experience that you've had for the different positions you held for them, you know, help you with what your current role is for Vadio?
Yeah. So, you know, my joke about the three brands is that I haven't really figured out yet if I'm a triple threat or a rotating liability. So I don't know if this is my last chance. This is like third strike and I'm out. Or if I did well and they wanted to continue to give me some opportunities. You know, no, the other brand experience has been great. So the good part is that my territory hasn't really shifted much. So with Chief, I had all of California, Nevada, Hawaii. With Daylight, I just had Southern California. And now with Vadio, I told you my territory. So a lot of the dealers have stayed constant. So even though I've had, you know, 4 years with Milestone in three different brands, my contacts at those companies have been pretty steady.
Mm-hmm.
And
you just wear a different shirt when you go in.
Yeah, exactly. You've got a different box of stuff, you know? So they always wonder which box of stuff I'm bringing in that day. And I honestly still filled a lot of calls for Chief and Daylight, which is fine. We have reps and I'll make sure to copy them in, but some people just, they know me and they just real easy to give me a call and say, hey, I just had a quick question. Can you help me?
And they know you're going to have the answer.
Yeah. So I think that's been helpful for credibility. I think the other thing that's been really helpful is that some of the Vadio team weren't former Milestone employees. So, you know, some of the Vadio team was hired once we came on board and changed the sales structure a little bit. And some of them were legacy Vadio people. And I feel like they've leaned on me a little bit to just kind of help get used to how things work inside, right? Mm-hmm. Like, how do we pull these reports in SAP? Or how are you guys traditionally using Salesforce? Or which dealers would traditionally get, you know, a better program or a bid price, or how have they done that when we mm-hmm. have projects come in? And so I feel like at least maybe I've been a little bit of a help to them in that way. I'd like to think that I've been helpful. But yeah, so I think that's been good to have somebody come into a new team that's been with the corporate culture for a while.
Awesome. So, man, I feel like I'm like your number one fangirl right now, because I'm very excited that you recently took another certification test and passed. So now you have your CTSI and your CTSD. So congratulations. Woohoo!
Yeah, long time coming for sure. Yeah.
So what drove you to get dual certified? Was it, you know, all the AV tweeps talking smack on Twitter?
Yeah, I think that's some of it. Yeah, right. I mean, it's street cred. You want some of that street cred. I'll say what was interesting about the kind of the CTS journey is that, you know, when I worked for a commercial integrator here, our thought on CTS was always, if we need it for a project, we'll go get it.
Right. Like,
we already know, I mean, we had guys that had degrees in medical device engineering and, you know, degrees in electronics and degrees in aerospace. And, mm-hmm. and the guys were actually real engineers. They had real engineering degrees. They had,
right.
You know, in Europe, you can't call yourself an engineer unless you actually have an engineering degree. They don't let you.
I worked with a guy that had an aerospace engineering. So I'm like, oh, I can really call you a rocket scientist.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So, you know, their thought was, you know, we're not going to go get a certification to put next to our name. We've got engineering degrees. If we need it because a consultant says we need CTS, then we'll mm-hmm. send one of our guys down one day. He'll take the test. He'll get CTS and we'll come back and we'll do the job. Mm-hmm. So that was always an interesting take. And that was really my first real commercial company. So, you know, when I came out of that company, that was kind of my thought process on the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Then I came to Milestone, and Milestone has all of its salespeople get CTS. Which I thought was good. I think for, especially for inside sales and stuff like that, they get it too. So, you know, they know a little bit more about what people are using the product for. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when you call in, you say, hey, I'm having this problem. You'd like the guy on the other end of the phone to know more than just to read the manual to you.
Right.
Right. To have some type of real world application of what you're actually trying to do out in the field right. with it. Mm-hmm. So they can help you get through it.
Right. Like, it's great for them to be like, oh yeah, I've experienced this before, or no, I haven't heard that, but you know, have we tried this? Like, you know, cause I agree. Like, sometimes you call in when you have a problem and you can just totally tell you've caught, you know, the C team that day, and they're like, let me open the manual and we will walk through it. Is it turned on?
Yes, that's exactly. I had a guy, and he was at a major company. I won't run him through the mud on the show, but he was at a major company, and you know, we used to sell these solutions, and I would call, and they had one guy in that division that did tech support, and he would like answer his phone from the airport, and I'd ask him a question, and he would literally start reading me the manual, and I'm like, I already read the manual. That's why I'm calling you. It's mm-hmm. not in there. Like, what's happening isn't solved. Right. I need somebody that works with this all the time that's seen it. So, I mean, I did the CTS general. And then a couple of years ago, I went to Infocom, and I found out that the D and the I, that there were under, I think at the time, there were under 200. There were like 175 people that were dual certified. And I'm like, that would just be kind of cool, mm-hmm. you know? And like we talked about Phenom earlier, I'm like, you know, maybe the people quit teasing me so much. If I, you know, if I actually had some of this stuff, I could prove that maybe I knew what I was talking about. So I wrote a blog that year that I was going to do it in the next year, and I didn't get it done in the next year, but, I had said I was going to do it. And for me, honestly, sometimes that's just all it takes. Like, if I say it out loud, other people hold me accountable to it. I want to be able to say, I got it done, you know? So Melissa Dillman used to tease me a little bit. Leonard Susskind used to mm-hmm. tease me a little bit. Like, hey, are you getting your dual? You said you're getting your dual. I'm like, I guess I got to go do that. I guess people don't lie. Design was very difficult. I won't lie.
That's the one that I'm struggling with, because I really want to get my CTSD, and it's been a little bit more difficult for me now that I'm not at an integrator anymore, and now that I'm working, you know, and doing marketing. But I know I have the knowledge in me. It's just applying it correctly to the questions that get asked to me, and it's been a struggle. But I know a lot of people that have struggled with that.
Yeah, it was not an easy test. So it wasn't easy. And then, you know, I thought was a little easier, although it wasn't an easy test by any means.
Now, do you think I is easier only because a lot of times that's more from a hands-on perspective?
Yeah, it's less theory. So, right. You know, when you're, I'm not giving away any secrets or breaking the code of ethics, you know, by talking about that. But yeah, I think it's because it's real world stuff. I mean, mm-hmm. A lot of it, if you've been around job sites, it's probably things that are, you think are common sense, but are actually processes and procedures that are written down somewhere.
Right.
But you never really learned them from a manual. You learned right. them from the guy on the job site that told you why we're doing it this right. way.
Right, like the proper anchoring of a display on a wall, yeah. like why you would back it. Yeah.
Exactly. Or you know that, you know, or something like, you know, that the top bolts take more pressure than the bottom bolts because they're the ones that are, mm-hmm. you know, taking the shear pressure, the weight is trying to pull those out of the wall, and the bottom bolts are really just creating more of a secure platform. Mm-hmm. But, you know, just little things like that that you see, or you've seen it in the field, like, oh, the those little drywall anchors we put in the top of the display are just pulling right out of the wall. You know, like, wow, that was probably a bad idea. We probably should have had something back there besides drywall to hang this thing
from. Oh my God. So. That just happened. Well, not at a job, but I was visiting my father right before Infocom because he just moved to Florida. So yeah. I went down to visit him. He's on the West Coast. And I'm like looking around, and he's got like a nice shelf of beer steins up above a window. And I'm looking at, I'm like, yeah, Dad, did you put that in a stud? Oh no, I've got, you know, those butterfly pop outs in there. It's just in the drywall. I'm like, dude, you got to get that in a stud. No, it's going to hold, Chris. It's fine. I'm like, all right. Like, and literally I went to Infocom and I went back to see him for Father's Day. Right. And he's like, you will never believe what happened last week while you were gone. It fell and broke all my steins. I'm like, that's why you got to get it into at least one stud. It needs something to like hold it in. Come on, Dad. Yeah. I felt bad for him that all his steins broke, but I felt really good too. Cause I'm like, I know what I'm talking about.
Yes, exactly. Vindication.
Yes.
Vindication for sure. That's so yeah,
it's when you don't talk, listen to me.
Yeah. I'm not just the little kid you used to, you know, tell stuff to all the time. I grew up and I learned a few things.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right, Krista. I think the eye is easier for people that have been around the industry because of mm-hmm. stuff that we've seen and experienced.
Yeah.
And from a design perspective, you know, from the D perspective, you know, a lot of those things are theory and equations and things that maybe you've looked up when you've needed to. Right. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we're all really good at Googling, you know, right. or looking up Ohm's law when we want to
yeah.
know if we're going to blow up an amplifier.
Or going and talking to the actual engineer if you're not an engineer, and then like, yeah. what do I need to do here? Yeah.
Exactly. So that one was a little more difficult. I'll tell you too, you know, I've written about CTS a few times, pro and con.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow everybody thinks I said CTS was worthless. I never actually said that. Craig McCormick calls me out on that all the time. Like, you said CTS was worthless. I'm like, I didn't say CTS was worthless. I said it could be better. That's what I said. And so, you know, and I still think it could be better. I think if they had some type of program that that allowed either clients or your employer to rate your working knowledge over time, mm-hmm. Would be a great part of the, besides the RUs,
right?
Have you been effective in your role as you've went forward?
I guess they sort of, I don't know if they took your actual suggestion, but they sort of have that now in the APEX program.
Yes.
You know, so they actually have to get the feedback from clients and whatnot yep. on you before they just give you, you know, because before in the old version of being,
oh yeah,
CABSP or whatever. Yeah, yeah. You were just like, oh, okay. We met the goals. Here it is. Here's your certificate.
Yeah. It was an internal checklist that you filled out yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, yes, we did a great job on this project. And
yes,
here's the sheet we
filled
out telling ourselves.
We have 50% that have some sort of CTS. Yes, we're good. But yeah. I'm a big proponent for CTS, obviously, but my beef with it is how I think it could get better is I see a lot of, technicians that are trying, they would probably pass their CTSI on the first pass, but to get to the CTSI, they have to pass the CTS. And yep. a lot of that information isn't quite what your technicians are doing on a day-to-day basis. You know, yeah. it's like from the sales side, you know, from start to finish. And, you know, it's a shame because I'm seeing people that I know would probably pass the I first time that are failing the regular CTS multiple times because it's not the stuff they know. So yep. I, like, to me, I would like to see, you know, CTS itself, it could shift a little bit that maybe that is more salesy, business development, professional type certification. And then you have the I that is your technical and your D that is design technical.
Yep. Yeah. I could see that for sure. I mean, the thing is in with any of the tests really, you know, Infocom has the little black book mm-hmm. and the little black book are the terms that Infocom's come up with to define certain things.
And they're not sometimes the same as what you use.
Yeah,
and exactly. I say that to people all the time, like, you know, make sure you understand their terminology because, you know, they might say programming phase. Well, let me tell you, it's not going to be about a touch panel. Yeah. It's a completely different thing.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's the main thing. And honestly, I understand how they have to do that because sure. you have to create a common vocabulary.
Yes.
So I'm not criticizing that at all. I'm just saying, I think a lot of times, you know, even people's working knowledge of sales and stuff may be good enough to get through some of those questions because a lot mm-hmm. of that can be common sense.
Right.
But if you don't know those little pieces, those mm-hmm. can be the difference between a pass and fail. And,
right.
and so just making sure you have that little black book and you really study it
yeah.
is a great thing to do. Now, I mean, I was happy to get it. I'm extremely proud that I was able to do it. I'll tell you that I couldn't have done it without help from, you know, Chuck and Melissa. We're both great. Chuck Espinoza helped me get an exam guide for CTSI.
Mm-hmm.
So that was great. And without that book, I don't know that I would have remembered all the stuff that was in there technically.
Yeah.
And Melissa, you know, when I was going through my D, she was actually running a D review program for Infocom.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, her and I got to go through a review, you know, when she was teaching a class, she allowed me to come in remotely. So, I think without those two people, I wouldn't have got there. So mm-hmm. shout out to Melissa and Chuck. That's nice part about having, you know, good industry connections and knowing people is that, you know, there is a community. And the book that, I had is actually on a traveling circuit. So my book went to somebody else who is now studying for the I.
Nice.
So. Yeah, it's great. So we're just trying to, that's the sisterhood of the traveling book.
Got to put your initials in there, you know, so yeah. you can see how many people touch it.
I did. I actually wrote, you know,
Mark
Chuck
was here.
Yeah, this book was given by Chuck Espinoza to Mark Coxon. And then, you know, she's going to do the same when she gets done with it. She's a gal. So going to have a rock star CTSI female coming into the industry, which we need, right?
I do. I like hearing that. I like actually when, I mean, I like when I see anybody get the certification. So, but I really get excited when I see a female going for either the D or the I, and I'm like, wow, that's awesome. Because, you know, we often talk about in general how our industry is very male dominated, and I have seen it shift over the years, but it's still very male dominated. But while I've seen a lot of, women come into the industry, a lot of them still seem to be in an admin or salesy role. They're not really getting into the nitty gritty technical. So when I get to meet some technical women, I absolutely love that. And I hope that, you know, we see that expand more and more as the years go on. Because, you know, at some point you and I are probably going to, you know, rule the world of AV, right? I mean, some of these people have to start dying off soon and then somebody's got to step in.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's just about being present. That's it, right? You just have to outlast. It's like Survivor.
Exactly.
Outlast.
You got to be the least awful solution, you know? Oh, just Mark yeah. could be the president. Krista could be the vice president.
It's like the old, I heard Louis C.K. once talk about, you know, dating and how he now at his stage in life at 40, he can actually get women that are attractive to date him. When he was 18, he couldn't get women that were attractive to date him. And his joke was, you know, it's just a matter of time before her life circumstances make this look okay. So at some point the industry is going to have to go, well, there's really nobody else. I'm going to have to give that guy a shot after all. I don't know if he's phenomenal or not, but, you know, he's one of the guys that stuck around.
He's not the worst.
He's not AV worst.
So I have one last question for you before yep. I let you go. So if you could put together a dream team of AV tweeps to work with, who would that team include?
Oh my gosh. So that's, that'd be great. It's funny because there are so many people with niche knowledge, mm-hmm. I think out there in the industry. Of course, Chris Netto, I would throw Chris Netto on a team. Number one, just for knowing how to create events, create attention. But I think he's one of those guys that really understands that there's a why behind what we do and that just throwing a fancy display up on the wall doesn't mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, I think there are some people in the industry, and I'm not a ton, but there are some companies that it's all about hardware, right? Mm-hmm. They're the guys that are struggling a little bit. You know, they think if they have the new line of display, that means they're going to be relevant in the future.
Yeah, and if anything, we've seen the shift of pretty much everything. I forget what I called it the other day, but it's not the AS, but the AAS, you know, everything as a service. Yes. I mean, that's what everything is shifting to, and the hardware is sort of becoming, you know, oh, well, you have to have a display or you have to have this, you know, fine, give me whatever, but I really just need to solve this solution.
Yeah. So I mean, I definitely have Chris on any dream team I put together just because I think he'd be a good, you know, advocate for that. You know who I really like is Simon Dudley. I know he's an interesting character.
Yeah.
I think he's got great stories. I like his 10th man attitude about things, about being the contrarian and trying to throw the wrench into the works to see if you can break it.
Right.
You know, and he knows me coming into Vadio, you know, I wasn't always in the VTC space. I did commercial AV, but not every job I did was video conferencing. And in fact, a lot of them were more kind of interactive storytelling things that I did when I was a commercial integrator. So I really like that side of his experience, especially working for some of the bigger codec-based guys. Mm-hmm. I think he probably has a good bearing on where things go. And I hate to say that because he works for one of my competitors, right? But he is. I think he's just one of those guys that could add a lot to a brainstorming room. Mm-hmm. Karen Smith, who's at Chief, you know her?
Yep.
Oh my God, one of my favorite marketing people ever. Her and Jesse Larson, who's also at Milestone at Daylight. They had the Daylight and Chief brand teams. I've worked with them for quite a while, but they're just super creative. They understand new marketing. I think if I was going to start an integrator or start a manufacturer, those would be people I'd want out there promoting my stuff. I mean, if you couldn't get somebody like Kelly Perkins, then you get somebody like them too.
Yeah.
She's kind of in that same class, I think, right? Mm-hmm. Now that she's on the integration side. So, I like those folks. I guess I have to throw a nod to Josh Strago. I think he understands the security side of the business probably better than anybody. Mm-hmm. Right now, as far as net neutrality and Internet of Things security, I mean, he's one of those guys who will pick you to pieces on the details, right? Just to show you that you're not thinking things through. In a way that can be annoying, and in a way that's awesome. And I think you need that mindset with security, for sure. So I'd like him on the other side. I know we had one of our consultants in talking about cameras. And he was like, oh, do they have dual NICs? And I'm like, dude, you really need like a redundant network failover card in the camera to do like, come on, John. Really? You're not going to spec it if you can't plug it into two different network switches and have one failover to the other. But so, I mean, I like that side of him. I hate to just say people I know, but, you know, those are some of the people I think would be on a dream team. There's a guy named Ben Frederick.
Uh-huh.
Who's at Audio Gear, who was my QSC rep.
Okay.
One of the best manufacturer rep salespeople I've ever worked with. Knows a ton of stuff, really great, good at design review, super responsive. I think he'd be great on a team too.
So what about your install team? Who's going to now actually like make this happen? Because you got, you know, your team there.
You know, there's... the one guy I know that, and I have to go with somebody I worked with, right? Because directly, Sergey Kozlovsky, there's a mouthful.
he plays hockey. No.
Sergey Kozlovsky. he works at Mad Systems in Orange, and I worked at Mad Systems for 4 years. And I'll tell you, I only did a couple projects where I got to have him as my project manager, because most of the projects I were doing were more AV centric, and he did a lot of our museum stuff. He used to work for Scharf Weisberg, which got acquired by Electrosonic. Mm-hmm. He has a degree in like electronics engineering or something. Man, that guy for a project manager, just killer. I did a job at a church once where they wanted, you know, all the screens to look like part of the beam work and all this stuff. He came up with custom clamping. We got all the screens powder coated the same color as the beam work. We found, we did custom clamps for projector mounts in the back, did 80-foot throws across the room, even had to create a Wi-Fi bridge to extend the Wi-Fi from somewhere else into the space so we could use, you know, AirPlay on an iPad for using a camera as a remote piece off the iPad and stuff in the church. I mean, the guy just takes it and runs. And mm-hmm. I think a good project manager does that. They understand the spirit of the job and they're not going to ask you every 5 minutes for your approval.
Right.
It's like, okay, I know what it's supposed to look like. I know what it's supposed to do. We have the bill materials pretty much figured out, and there are going to be a few things on site that are going to change once we get up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it always drove me crazy when I would get calls from PMs from the site to come make decisions on the job.
Right.
When they were things that, I guess that I thought a project manager should be able to handle.
Mm-hmm.
So he would be my go-to in that respect. Technicians, you know, I've worked with some good ones. I hate to say that I don't have any that would be on my dream team. actually, you know what? And I wish I knew their last names. There were two guys I worked with in Arizona, Steve and Matt. And they were contractors I used. I had to when I took over residential division in Arizona in 2006, when the market was going to die, I had to hire techs on piecework. So meaning I had a house and it had 8 outlets that needed to be roughed in and a central vacuum. And we just paid them a flat price. It was an hourly. Right. It's like, hey, these 8 drops and these 20 security contacts pay $250. Do you guys want to come do it or not?
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty much how it is. These guys were insane. They would come in a house, like 2,000, 2,400 square foot house that had home theater, music on the patio, Cat 5 and coax in every bedroom, and window contacts on every window on the downstairs. So probably 40 drops of wire and 100 feet each. These guys would knock out 3 houses in a day.
Wow.
2 guys.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a method. And I think I wish I could have sent people out to walk at them, because what would happen is they'd come in. And I think integrators miss this sometimes. They look at wire footages, but they don't look at how the job is done. So you might say, hey, I have 3,000 feet of wire in that house. I'm going to send 3 boxes of 1,000 feet of wire.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the problem is if they're running those back to a central location, they've got to move those 3 boxes, you know, 6 different times to get 20 drops.
Right.
It's better to send 20 boxes out there.
Mm-hmm.
Cause what these guys did is that one guy drilled top plates. The other guy screwed mud rings to the wall.
Mm-hmm.
They dropped a box at every mud ring, and then all 20 went up in the ceiling at the same time, rip them over, pull them down.
Wow.
I mean, these guys would get 20 runs done in 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So I think sometimes from an operations perspective, you need those guys too, you know, a good lead technician that understands workflow.
Mm-hmm.
Another really cool thing that they used to do on trim, which I would suggest any residential guy adopt, and maybe some commercial guys too, is when you're charging a client hourly, you know, the client's breathing down your neck when you're on the site, especially if they think you're doing nothing.
Right.
And so a lot of guys like to come in and do the rack first,
mm-hmm.
get it all terminated, cleaned up, get the wall cleaned up. It's good theory, because you got to have the sources up before you can push anything anywhere anyway. But if you're 4 days in the rack room trimming out a rack, the client doesn't see any progress. You know, he's got 40 rooms that need speakers and TVs. Mm-hmm. So what these guys used to do to keep the client off their back, they'd go around and they'd hang all the TVs and they just wouldn't connect them.
Mm-hmm.
So the first day they'd go around, they'd unbox them all. They'd put them up on the mounts, put them up on the wall,
mm-hmm.
placeholders. Everything's ready to go. Everything's mounted. If they needed to take them down for some reason, put them back in the box, they could. But that's what they did. And then when the client came in, they're like, man, these guys are like 90% done. They've only been here a day. And then they leave you alone, you know?
Yeah.
And then when they come back 3 days later, they're like, oh, it looked like you were almost done. Oh, no, we had a lot of work to do here. But they're not constantly going, what's going on? What's going on? You guys don't mm-hmm. have anything done. Which we had a lot. Like, you're charging me hourly. I don't see you doing anything.
Right.
Yeah, the stuff we're doing is stuff you wouldn't see, but it's mm-hmm. stuff that makes your system work. So, but yeah, Steve and Matt from Arizona, used to work for Ultima Electronics. I don't remember their names. It was 10 years ago, unfortunately. But they were actually my best 2 technicians ever. And I hate to say they were on the resi side, but they were.
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes that happens. So.
Yeah, sometimes resi does stuff right. What happened there? No, resi's great. It's a totally different sale. I don't know if you ever worked with resi, but
I have not. I've avoided that. I don't know if I'd ever go resi. I mean, I have certain mindset of how I think for resi, like from my perspective. I mean, it's certainly awesome and it needs to be there. I just don't know that I would want to be a part of resi, but just more so from dealing with the clients, you know, I think that's how I look at it. But
well, it's somebody's home and it's a reflection of them personally.
Right.
And so it is, it's a much more personal. So if you don't have true empathy for people or really like people, I think you are doomed in the resi market. You really have to like people.
And it seems like also for resi, you know, it's, you have to get it done, and that's going to mean nights. It's going to mean weekends. It's not like it's not your 9 to 5 Monday through Friday. Like it's, you're going to get phone calls at night. Like, oh my God, my receiver's shut off. I don't know what to do. Like,
it's the Super Bowl. I have 40 people here. I don't know how many times I got that. I don't know how to turn the Super Bowl on.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So we mentioned this earlier on your Twitter handle, but how can people find you if they want to get in touch with you?
Okay. So if you want to find me, I'm Mark Coxon on LinkedIn. Mark Coxon the second, actually, I think. So you can find me there. And then Twitter at AVPhenom, A as in audio, V as in video, and then Phenom, P-H-E-N-O-M. Those are the two main places, or you can find me mark.coxon@milestone.com. That's an easy way to get me too, especially if you have something work related. But those are the main ways, or you can go to Rave Pubs and click the blog squad link at the top, and my name pops up in there too. So if for some reason you care about what I think or have to say, Lord knows nobody in my house does, but if somebody else out there does, then you could go read it. I might have wrote it down somewhere.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Mark. This has been super awesome.
Well, yeah, no, I appreciate it. I appreciate getting to talk to you, and congratulations on being with Pivot and on the Tech Chaos success.
Thank you. Awesome sauce. Yeah. I mean, you know, maybe you can have me come over and play around in selling AV a little bit with you.
We should do that soon.
Awesome.
Awesome. Thanks, Krista.
And thank you for listening to this show, and we will see you next time.